You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hello, One of Us listeners. My name is Nick. You may recognize my voice from One of Us shows such as The Screener Squad, The Final Watch series, and occasionally The Breakfast Pub. Recently, I ventured into the world of audiobooks and created my own production company, Mercs with Mics, which so far has been quite successful. The bad news is that it's a little too successful for me to actually keep up with the workload on. So I'm looking for some freelance audio editors to help me out with some basic editing. Things like editing out flub takes, loud breathing between dialogue, and the elimination of clicks and pops and other artifacts that might end up on the audio. Payment would start at the rate of $70 per full hour of edited audio. I'm also looking for narrators, with a decent home recording setup, and at least some previous experience in acting. If you are interested in either of these positions, please contact me at mercswithmics@gmail.com. Thank you for your time, and a special thanks to all the listeners who support oneofus.net and keep this wonderful site going. You make me proud to be one of us.
OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. Day in the Neighborhood tells the story of everybody's favorite human being, Fred Rogers. Mr. Rogers, except for the darker side you didn't know.
No idea you could do that to a
Did
body.
Anybody else think of like Jim Carrey's version when they were watching this at any point in time?
I still haven't watched that show yet.
Oh, is that the one
from
where
he was on Living
Color?
Yeah, cuts off body parts and stuff.
No,
like
he goes to rent some dirty movies at a video store, and then he brings out a puppet and he feels up the female like video.
Because I haven't seen that one, but I have seen the bits with Eddie Murphy.
So Eddie Murphy's Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Anyways.
And this was so close to Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, it was embarrassing.
No, but like Jim Carrey also has a show where he's playing a knockoff Mr. Rogers character.
What is that show?
I'm blanking the name of. I think it's on Hulu or something.
It's, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It got really good reviews, but yeah, but it's like Mr. Rogers, but what if he actually had kind of a dark side? Mr. Rogers did not have a dark side.
Not at all.
Like, not he was spotless. You know how you always like wish that the people that you admire are like the characters that they play on television or movies? Like, they're really like that. Like, Harrison Ford really is this big adventure. Well, to be fair, he actually kind of is. He saved all those people from a forest fire. But still, you know what
carpenter.
I mean?
And he's a carpenter, too.
You know what I mean?
Just like Jesus.
And they almost never are like, you know, I mean, Kristen Bell's not Veronica Mars, you know?
Oh, but if she could be Veronica Mars.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Like, I'd like to think that she is. But Mr. Rogers was Mr. Rogers.
There's actually a point where the journalist character asks him, is like, is there a, you know, the difference between Fred and Mr. Rogers,
the character you play.
And he was just looked at him confused. He's like, what?
Who? What?
Huh? Yeah, no,
what is this language you speak?
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, talking with his puppets. Come play with us, Timmy. This is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I'm Chris.
Oh, hi, Squeak.
Mindy.
And Frank.
So this is directed by Marielle Heller, who did just recently the Academy-nominated Can You Ever Forgive Me last year. And then in 2015, a movie I really love, Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Oh, that's right.
Which
yeah,
a lot of people still have not seen, and it's so good.
It is a good movie, but Can You Ever Forgive Me is better.
I don't agree.
Oh, okay. Well, we can still be friends, Chris, even though you're wrong.
So this, of course, is the only... I mean, this is the most obvious casting since Robert Downey Jr. played Tony Stark. Is getting Tom Hanks to play Mr. Rogers. Yeah. He's America's sweetheart. As near as I can tell, Tom Hanks is also kind of unassailable.
There's actually a Christopher Titus joke that's all about every celebrity has, like, crazy points that they can redeem at any time. And Tom Hanks is somebody that he could punch a nun, and people would be like, what did that nun one do to piss off Tom Hanks?
Right? Oh my God, can you believe that the nerve of that nun?
She said she like bonfire the vanities.
See the way she assaulted his fist with her nose? That was just awful.
It's probably true. This story, though, surprisingly, Mr. Rogers, although not as a character per se, he's not the primary character. He's more the supporting character. Although the whole film is about him and sums up kind of who he, what his soul was.
I disagree. I don't think the movie is about him. I think it is about the kindness that he wanted us all to have.
It's about his influence.
But because there's the not cartoonation, but the, so they take us into, McFriendlyville or whatever the town is that
I forget what that town was called. It's so iconic.
So anyway, we fly through the town and we're seeing things as they're fictionalizing Mr. Rogers. I just lost his name. Whatever the hell that guy's name is.
I was like, who are you trying to say?
And then the approach back though is that you're kind of getting everything from fictionalization of Tom Judeau, who is called Lloyd Vogel in the film.
Yeah, it's the way they set up the world is that in the beginning of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, it's the neighborhood, but everything is a model. Mm-hmm. And it's very clearly a model. But then it goes to between the two places of New York and Pittsburgh, where the journalist lives versus where Mr. Rogers lives. And it's done in the same style of that model, which I thought was very clever.
Every time they transitioned,
there was one moment where it was interesting that they used reality to indicate fantasy. Because I caught it where it's... like I said, every time they transition between these two places, it goes to that model. And at one point, the main character is having a nervous breakdown, and mm-hmm. he has hallucinations, and he gets on a bus to Pittsburgh, but that bus and the bridge it's on is real. And so the realness of it indicates that it's a fantasy, which is really weird.
I know, we were going, wait. Did Spike Jonze direct this?
Yeah, exactly. But I loved it. I love the whole like magical realism aspect of it. It made it really just involving. I know you love that, Chris.
I'm all about that. Even though it never quite tips over into true magical realism.
No.
But it toys with the idea.
It starts out with Mr. Rogers setting up a show. And setting it up is like there's a picture board with little doors and you open the door, there's a picture inside, and that's how it sets up the characters. It's like, here's a character from my show, here's one of the puppets, and here is our main character over here. Which when it got to that and it's this dude with a busted up face, it's like, wow, this has gotten very dark in a very dark way.
That's the approach you're gonna take. Oh, I like this. This is not straightforward whatsoever.
It wasn't, but it was very jarring because it was, you know, Tom Hanks singing the song and putting on the cardigan and changing his shoes, and then it opened that one little door, and it's like, okay, things got dark quickly.
So said character is played by Matthew Reeves, who's playing Lloyd Vogel, based on a real journalist, Tom Junod from Esquire. It was based on his experience meeting Mr. Rogers. Now, I don't know, not having read the article, how much of this is exactly accurate.
The article is great. So there's actually two articles. So there's the article in Esquire that was in, I think it was 96, I think is what it
98.
Came out.
98. 98, yeah.
Sorry. And the article is, it's a good interview with a man, and it's quirky. Like, he goes to meet him at his apartment in New York. And he's expecting to see Mr. Rogers answer the door, and he's in this frumpy, old, worn-out blue robe and his fuzzy slippers. And he brings him in and offers him tea, and he just doesn't know what to do with himself because he is kind of the jaded character he is in the movie. He's been a war correspondent, and he's a journalist. And then he shows up, and he's supposed to do this fluff piece on Mr. Rogers, and it does get much larger. So that much is true. And that much also, there's pieces of the movie that are in the article, but
the article is called "Won't You Be My Hero?" By the way,
yes. Mm-hmm. And so the article is more of a suggestion of what kind of like the article is not the movie.
So perhaps they brought a lot into it for the purpose of the narrative this narrative, which as we follow Matthew Reeves' character, we see. Although he is happily married to Susan Kelechi Watson, playing Andrea Vogel, and they have a brand new baby, he is very upset when he goes to his sister's wedding, which they said is like basically the
umpteenth
wedding.
And, one every year.
And his father, who he's extremely estranged from, played by Chris Cooper, is there. And they literally, very shortly into the reception, he just cold cocks his own dad. And you're like, what is going on? The upshot of all this is he is dealing with an awful lot of anger against his father. And unresolved childhood issues. And he's not, it's colored his whole life. It's kind of made him to some degree the person that he is. And that he is very jaded, doesn't really trust people, incredibly cynical. I mean, when they tell him, when his boss tells him, you've got to do this article, he's like, why are you punishing me? Like, I'm an investigative journalist. Why do you want me to write this fucking puff piece about some children's show entertainer guy?
Because you're messed up. Yeah. That's why.
And the boss says because nobody else would allow you to interview them.
Yeah, because he's just a kind of a bastard.
Yeah, and his wife, when he tells his wife, she's like, don't ruin my childhood.
Like, don't be your cynical self, please. Yes.
But it's like, it's fascinating watching him because he's not the audience avatar unless you're an extremely angry person who wants to murder your own father, but he is there in a sense the avatar for the movie in and of itself, which, like I said, right, is not really about the story of Mr. Rogers. It's the story of his soul and
important, because, and it's mentioned, and I think going into this it really helped, a lot of us watched Won't You Be My Neighbor, yes, which is the documentary.
So I mean, we all watch it. They are companion pieces.
And if you watch this, it's very helpful to have watched that documentary first. You get a lot of nuance. But one of the things about Fred Rogers was that, and it mentions it through his wife and also through him and things that he said, is that, you know, the term saint gets thrown around, the term hero gets thrown around. Mm-hmm. And both of them are like, no, that's not, you know, we're not perfect. He's not a perfect person, but, you know, he has a temper. He has, like, you know, this guy is constantly trying to poke him, being like, how does it feel like to carry this burden of other people's problems, and really trying to make him break, and he doesn't. And
not in a very aggressive
not
way.
Not in an aggressive way. I mean, no, but there are things, because he's like, you know, what do you do with these emotions? And in his song, you know, what do you do with the anger you feel, which is what he used in the Senate.
He's so jaded that this is a natural instinct that would expect him to have.
Yes, right? But the thing is, Mr. Rogers would not want to be seen as somebody special. His legacy he would want is to be known for how he brought good into the world. And I think that is very much the structure of the movie, is not to highlight who Fred Rogers was as a human being, but to be like, this is his influence, this is his impact, and that is what he is important for, and that is why he is important.
There's a point where he asks him, at one point, you did the show for this long, to this long, and at one point you stopped for 3 years, and then you came back. I mean, why'd you come back? And I think that's a really key moment.
Money and power?
It's a really key moment where he goes, well, you know, I mean, like, times are changing, and I thought we had said what we had to say, but I basically wanted to be able to tell children.
He had two sons who were teenagers.
Sons who were teenagers. And I was like, I want to be able to teach children how to understand their own emotions and how to process them, which is kind of the theme of this film, because on some level, none of us really completely grow up. In fact, a lot of us get worse. A lot of people get worse and worse at processing their emotions as they get older.
And that story that you mentioned.
I wasn't talking. She's like, is this a personal attack? This is a personal attack, isn't it?
And that answer that, you know, you mentioned about, you know, why he left, this was said in conjunction with the reporter asking about his family. And it's like, well, my son didn't acknowledge me until really recently. My other son was very much a test for me. So it's like there are hints of his sons were not what you would think of as, I am the son of Fred Rogers.
He didn't say he didn't acknowledge him. He said he didn't acknowledge him as being Mr. Rogers. The television star.
In terms of the public persona.
So it's like, the coming back to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood was in conjunction with not having a angelic home life as well. So it's like that was an interesting nuance to it. It wasn't just I realized there was more stuff to say. It's like I realized there was more stuff to say because things were not perfect at home.
So I, as most movies, when I go see them, I walked in blind, although for God's sakes, I knew it was about Mr. Rogers. And so as I mentioned to Chris when we walked in, I was like, if I'm not blubbering halfway through this, this is a shitty movie. And so
yeah, no, that's true.
But so the documentary, I mean, you could hear the ugly cry all over
the
that.
Sniffles all
yeah, everybody was like, yeah, oh my exactly. God, Mr. Rogers. And it that was like it was a kick to the chest for a bunch of us in a really happy way, just mm-hmm. because there were so many people who grew up with Mr. Rogers, and then here he is, and we're seeing all the back of him, but it's still him, and he's wonderful. And so I went into this, and I thought, okay, this is a fictionalization of a day in the life or something like that. Mm. And the fact that it wasn't really, again, it wasn't really about Mr. Rogers, it was about the impact.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. And so I would say that I wouldn't say it's the same, or I wouldn't even say they're companion pieces. It'd be nice if you didn't know Mr. Rogers to see the first one, but I think you don't need to see the documentary in order to get the love.
I think you can get a really deeper appreciation of this film having watched the documentary. Yeah, like the restaurant scene.
Yeah, that was apart from the documentary
as
well. Yeah,
like mirrors the very last bit of the documentary. The documentary, he says, everybody close your eyes and think mm-hmm. of that one person that made a difference to you. And it's beautifully reinterpreted.
Yeah,
and
it's the best scene in the film for
yeah,
my
Yeah, it's
money.
In a restaurant, and they essentially recreate that. And on top of that, Fred Rogers' real wife, or real widow, was a cameo in that restaurant.
I know, she's, yeah. Yeah.
She's right there.
She's adorable.
Who also does a greeting at the beginning of the film, yeah. basically saying, I completely support this yeah. movie. Yeah,
and on top of that being like, you know, Fred was all about, you know, the screen between the kid and him was a holy space. And it's like, that sums up Fred Rogers. Well, this is a holy act. But yeah, so that scene in the restaurant where it's like, think of the people that made you who you are. And
Who loved you into who you are.
That's true.
That
That's
line.
A very...
Oh.
And everybody in the restaurant in that scene got quiet and did it with them. Everybody in the audience got quiet and did it with them. And it was
fun. And what does he say?
You're too busy blubbering.
Like, he says, it'll come to you.
Yeah, he's like,
no, they'll come to you.
Yeah, because the journalist was reluctant. And he's like, it'll come to you.
Yeah.
And it did.
It came to me.
Yeah.
There's so many nice, soft moments in this film.
Yes.
And it's a very sweet film that yet is very intelligent and knows exactly mm-hmm. what it's doing. It's just kind of a masterpiece of structure in some ways.
Oh,
the structure of this film
is so great.
It's just incredibly well built. Yes. And for those who are worried, well, I already saw the documentary, why do I need to see this? It's a very different experience than the documentary.
Definitely.
You are not just watching a fictionalized version or dramatized version of his life. You're watching something else. And honestly, although there have been other biopics that have attempted to do, well, this is based around an interview. There was one just recently with about Hervé Villechaize and the last interview.
How was that?
I've
heard that was a train wreck.
I've not seen it.
Interview with a vampire.
Someone should totally do that.
Called My Dinner with Hervé.
Oh,
it was literally called My Dinner with Hervé.
Yeah, based on a very famous, distressing interview.
It was Peter Dinklage and Jamie Dornan. I kid you not.
I really kind of want to see it.
HBO movies,
but it's not the first movie to take this tack.
No, it's not.
But it's certainly Having seen that, I can't speak to the comparison, but I can say this felt like something new in this time of so goddamn many biopics that it was very refreshing in and of itself. It wasn't just trying to get all the facts in like we saw with the current war, where it was like, here's all the stuff that happened that you need to know.
This
was just wanted you to get the important messages out of it, and did it in a way that was so smart and so gentle, and just really, like, when you cried, it wasn't because of sad things happening.
No.
It was because of just the sheer beauty of this person, this human being, and what he had to say.
It's so
and
great
on
to
top
cry
of that,
for
showed his humanity, because
I don't think
there's
any doubt.
Well, it's like,
it's a very, very specific view of humanity.
Yeah. I mean, the way he presented it, but like, there, you know, it's very easy to idolize Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
He was a beautiful, beautiful human being who did so much, brought so much love to the world. But there are bits in this where, like I said, he talks about how things weren't perfect with his sons. One of the things in his song about how do you deal with the anger that you feel is, and he suggests to the journalists, like, you know, pounding on a piano, like the lower keys just pounding on it and being angry. And at the end of the film, he plays the piano, and in the middle of his piece, he pounds the keys in anger and then goes back to playing. So it's like, he's not, that's one thing they reiterate, like his wife reiterates, he's not a perfect person. He has all the feelings that everybody else has. He's not a saint, he's not a hero. And yet he was able to find a way with all that to still create good and love and safety and be an inspiration. I think that is important.
I think on a personal level for me, because I remember seeing the Mr. Rogers documentary worrying ahead of time, is this going to get really into the Christianity aspect of that? Because like,
didn't you listen to that our stuff, review?
Like, yeah, no, no, I've seen it now. And I was like, Fred Rogers, the man, was very, very Christian himself, but he was a Sermon in the Mount type Christian.
Yes.
You know, where you're like, he didn't feel the need to push that part of it on you. It meant something to him. What he got out of it was the messages of Jesus, as it were. And this movie kind of does the same thing. It acknowledges that for him, this is important, but it really is just enough to be clear. This is just part of who this man was. When he's going to talk to you and help you like he's helping this guy, he is not saying, why don't you read these scriptures? That's not the point there. He's actually listening.
Yes, you know? He's found a person that he feels has the ability to be happy or to not be so unhappy. And it's like he wants to find it and find the thing that is causing pain and pull it out.
He always, and again, you can see this in both the documentary and the biopic, is that when he talked to you, he talked to you. He was engaged. Like, you know, like he's on the phone in the beginning of this movie with this journalist and he's like, you want to know what's the most important thing to me right now is the fact that I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Who they've not even met in person.
Yeah. And it's like that. He was always so engaged with you.
He also listened.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like,
he was curious about what they had to say.
Yeah. That's me being fully engaged. It's like, no, you are special. I love you just the way you are. And so therefore what you have to say is important. So I'm and he did that with everybody.
Yeah.
So about this movie in particular, so we have Tom Hanks, back to the subject, who is portraying Mr. Rogers. I've read a few things that he's, you know, he studied and he's met with Joanna a whole lot, and you know, they're buddies now and they've had dinner.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
And who would not be buddies with Tom Hanks given the chance?
Or Joanna.
Yeah, or Joanna.
But lovely. One of the things that I will say he didn't quite nail, but I'm glad he didn't, because I was a little set aside when the movie started.
Me too.
In that it's okay. Oh look, it's Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Hey look, it's Tom Hanks. Yeah. Isn't Tom Hanks wonderful? And I love Tom Hanks. Isn't that he's so great? And then so the cadence with which Mr. Rogers spoke was very intentional.
Yes.
Words separated by space so that small children could follow and wouldn't be intimidated because it's an adult who's talking at them. No, I'm going to use very... And some Hanks
so
didn't
what
quite,
you're saying is Eddie Izzard would never do a children's
show.
No,
oh my gosh.
I think
what you're saying is like, I think Tom Hanks was a little bit like, was too overconscious about that it kind of intimidated him a little bit.
I think so.
Yeah, and I kind of got that too.
I caught it, but I was like, you know, that's actually probably good because that's not Mr. fucking Rogers on the screen. That is Tom Hanks and he's wonderful. But it took me out just a little.
I did occasionally think about that, but I found the movie kept sweeping me away with what was happening on an emotional level that I kept forgetting. But I kept, when I would think about it, I'd go, I need to pay attention to Hank's performance. And for me, it was impossible after a point to think of him as Tom Hanks anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because the movie just so sells you on the story of this character.
It's also a really great script that does it, too.
But he even, I noticed the facial stuff he was doing, this thing like that Mr. Rogers would have kind of like this eye thing going on, way he held himself, and he was very consciously getting all of that down. And I guarantee you, some are going to accuse this performance of being an impression and not a performance.
No,
and I don't agree with that. I think Rogers is iconic to the point that you have to get it down exactly right. But I don't think there's anything in here that felt like you were watching Hanks do a thing on Saturday Night Live or something like that.
I think the first scene kind of goes kind of has the potential to go that way, but it very quickly becomes a performance. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree.
But you do have that initial sort of like, yeah,
and then that face, you're like, what?
Yeah, but then, oh my god, the script and the performance, and you know, I mean, it's actor and words and director all on the same wavelength, and it works.
What is Mr. Rogers doing that he's coming into this place and he has to take off his suit jacket? I'm like, do you have a business job in the city that you're coming home from? You like, put your sweater on.
He works at Charles Schwab.
No, you just like,
I was thinking he's a mortician, but okay.
He's a mortician. Oh my god. Well, he's a professional hitman.
That is actually a funny part, because there are so many of those, you know, tall tales about Mr. Rogers must have been a Navy SEAL and his arms are covered in tattoos. And they actually address that in the film, and he's like, you know, one of the other characters is like, so were you a sniper in the war? And it's like, no, I'm just me. There's so many, and I know why those things come about. It's like, you want to believe that this person is not who they are. It's like, there's no way this person's too nice.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
there's gotta be something dark about him. It's like, nope.
Or darker, quote unquote, real.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody can be completely just, you know, just that embraceable.
Yeah, and he's like, there's no way that this guy is real. And
I've only ever heard one thing that anyone ever pointed a finger at Mr. Rogers for, and really it was one of those, considering the time, you're like, what was the guy supposed to do? Where there was a bit of a thing about gay issues.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
So the documentary, and that hurt me in the documentary. That was the one thing in the documentary that was like, oh, Mr. Rogers, you should have fought for him. But he did say, you won't get away with it. They will hurt you. You have to stop. You have to stop going out. If they find out, they'll destroy you.
Yeah.
So it was coming from a place of love, but I really wish Mr. Rogers had wanted to be like, no, I will fight for
a
your
firebrand.
Rights. Yes.
But in the end, he stayed friends with the person in question.
Yeah. The guy saw him as a dad.
He was like,
there was a deep love. And he still used that policeman character to talk about civil rights issues.
Absolutely.
Like the whole thing of washing their feet in the pool.
So really, it's like, to get mad at him, you have to have decided you're going to be mad at him.
I'm going to be angry at Mr. Rogers because my soul is dead.
He had an idea, like picking his battles. And I thought he's like, no, don't give in to that sort of anger and that sort of hate, and you know, don't play into that. I think that's really what he was saying with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to final thoughts. Frank, get us started.
I loved every aspect of this film. To be honest with you, it's Kenyere, Forgive Me was my favorite film of last year. It was just perfection in every way possible. Yes, it was, Chris.
Okay.
It was.
If you say so.
I do say so.
I don't. He keeps trying to do the whole. I was like, no, I really liked it. I just didn't love it like everybody else. And so he's like, oh, Chris hates that movie.
No. You didn't hate. No, you react differently when you hate a film.
True.
But and so I had really high hopes, and especially coming off the documentary, which I saw last year as well. And man, this really just did it for me in every way, shape, or form. And fun fact, I cried the same amount of times I did in the documentary.
All right, then.
Like three times in the documentary, three times in this film. And it's so great to cry about something good. It's so great to cry out of joy rather than frustration.
Yeah, or sadness.
Or sadness or fear or, you know, any all the above. The script is perfect. The direction is solid. This doesn't linger. There's no scene that needs any trimming. You know, the actors are really great. Matthew Rhys. We don't talk about Matthew Rhys. Who,
tremendous performance.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, it's kind of like the sort of the Rain Man thing. Everybody really, like, in that film, everyone really heaps praise on Dustin Hoffman. Everyone forgets how great Tom Cruise is in that film as well, because he has the less flashier role.
Matthew Rhys had, like, his biggest success as an actor, I think most noticed, has been for the television show The Americans, which is tremendously good.
I love him from Brothers and Sisters.
Okay.
Which no one really gives props for, but I will. But
it's always Frank pulling in for the underdog.
It's always me. Yeah.
Pulling for the underdog.
But he is fantastic in this film, and he carries the film. Yeah. He's in virtually every scene that, you know.
He is the main character in this film.
Yeah. And he's great, and it's just all great, and it really is a celebration of Mr. Rogers. And I'm glad they didn't go with a straight biopic, because we've seen that with the documentary. This is really just how far-reaching his influence was, and how pure and honest it was, and the power it held. And it's done beautifully. I can't say anything bad about this one. I gotta give this 10 out of 10. Yeah, right. Trains I would like to deliver me to my neighborhood.
Squeak.
This was a great... Actually, you know, coming into the holiday season where there's going to be all this schlocky, awful, so sweet, and we can see the happy ending coming a mile away.
Cats.
We all know this is going to happen, have an ending because it is about Mr. Rogers, but it was a really sweet movie. All the points that were high points in the documentary that made people go, oh, they were all here too in a different, from a different angle, but here as well. And I really liked that it was more about the overall feeling and wasn't, again, like you said, like it wasn't just another biopic. Because that's not really what this is. I will say that other article by Tom Judot, I can't say it.
Junod,
there you go, is in The Atlantic this month. And it's a really nice follow-up to the original. So go find the Esquire article and then find the one in The Atlantic.
Nice.
Both good articles. So I would give this meow, 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 Lady Elaine out of 5. So that's 4 out of 5.
Fair. What about you, Mindy?
As I've said, you know, Mr. Rogers was a lovely, wonderful man. Here's the thing, though. And I've said this.
Oh, Jesus. No,
this is not about him and Tom Hanks and Mr.
He
Rogers.
Touched me inappropriately.
But,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But, like.
Chris, you're going to hell.
I've admitted this to other, you know, other people at the theater. But, like, when I was a kid.
Touched me inappropriately.
But, like, when I was a kid, I didn't like Mr. Rogers.
Oh, you told me this,
too.
Yeah,
like, I much preferred Sesame Street, and I've always... But as I've gotten older, I've increasingly respected and admired Mr. Rogers, and I think it's because Jim Henson, and with Sesame Street, he configured the world so that everything could be understood from a child's point of view. It's like, the world is crazy, here's a way so that we can bring it to your level so that you can understand it on your own. Mr. Rogers was very much like, the world is a confusing place. I am a safe adult who can guide you through it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that.
Let's explore together.
Yeah. The both of those things, depending on where you are in your life, both of those things are important. And as a kid, I needed Sesame Street. As an adult, where the world is a fireball of chaos and fear, and like I mentioned this in the Frankie review, my mommy is dying a horrible death. And like, you know, you talked about like crying for happiness. I was crying for a lot of sad stuff during the movie that he was bringing up, but in a way that was like
cathartic.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like these bad things are happening, and this safe adult is telling me it's gonna be okay. You know, I like you just the way you are, and you know, death is human, and therefore it can be talked about.
It's mentionable.
Yeah, it's mentionable.
And it's manageable.
And it's like, I think more adults than want to admit need a Mr. Rogers right now.
Yeah.
And I think this is, it's a weird, it's like, I feel a sense of nostalgia for something that I didn't have as a kid. So it's like, this was a great episode of me watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I actually thought, as an adult, and
it is
they
kind
were way
of,
more fun.
It is kind of an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
It's a very cinematic episode of Mr. Rogers.
It's an episode of Mr. Rogers for grown-ups, is
yeah,
what
it
this
is,
movie
it
is.
It absolutely is a set of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for adults. And I think a lot of people need that right now. Mm-hmm. And just as for the filmmaking in general, the fact that they set it up as, this is the neighborhood. And when it goes to Esquire and the journalist character, it's like, let's look at how Wade Magazine is made. And it has like that footage like it
Wasn't
would have
great?
On the show. That was great. Oh. Like the mailman came in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so,
how do you think I know how magazines are made?
And candy? Right?
And like candy? Candy? Oh, I know all ones. About how candy
yeah.
is made now.
And thanks to the Post, you know how newspapers are made.
Oh, shut up.
So, yeah, it very much feels like this is a Mr. Rogers, episode of Mr. Rogers for adults. I will say that the beginning was jarring. I thought that it was a bit too long. I wanted the focus to be on Mr. Rogers. And so if you're going in thinking the focus is on Mr. Rogers and then you spend a good, you know, 20, 30 minutes on this journalist dude that's like, that's not a nice guy. he's shown well, in a very. He's got baggage. Yeah,
he's got baggage.
Yeah. But
he's very kind to his wife.
Yeah,
and his
he
job.
Is.
He
but
loves
he's,
them.
But
and
he's
obviously not an asshole.
Yeah, he's not an asshole, but he's not. Mr. Rogers, no. And so
who is?
Oh my God!
Even Jesus would have been dude, tone it down.
Right.
Sorry, I gotta go.
Can you picture like Mr. Rogers going into the tax office and beating up a bunch of IRS guys? No,
I
can't.
Just apologizing,
right?
It's true. Sorry.
But yeah, so it's it took me once Mr. Rogers showed up and once it was revealed how the storytelling was going to be done. Hook, line, and sinker, mm-hmm. I was in. Mm-hmm. But it took that initial, why are we focused on this guy, to get into that point. So that, I think, was the only tiny, teeny negative that I got from this film. So it's like...
It's also the marketing thing, and I think a lot of people are going to feel the same way that you are.
I was a little surprised. I thought it was
I was surprised as well.
Yeah, so it's like, but other than that, it's a beautiful movie. It's an episode of Mr. Rogers for Adults that a lot of people need right now. So I am going to give it a 9.143 cardigans hand knit by your mom out of 10. And as an added note, 143 was Mr. Rogers' favorite number because 1, 4, and 3 are the same number of letters in the sentence, I love you.
Okay, wow. Talk about preparing for something ahead of time.
Yeah, he went to the gym, and he, like, once he got to that weight, he made a point to maintain his weight.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so that even his physical body was saying, I love you.
Wow.
So there is a dark version of the Mr. Rogers story. He was completely insane.
He was committed. Devoted.
Arkham Asylum, yeah. He's like Mr. Rogers, Batman's greatest foe. You imagine that? I mean, there's a parody here that has to happen of somebody like Mr. Rogers like talking to Batman and then he quits being Batman because he's like, I'm not angry anymore.
I can't do the Batman voice, but the deep, won't you be my neighbor?
Won't you? Yeah, exactly. Well, if it's Christian Bale Batman.
Yes, well, I'm sure you've seen the comic with Mr. Rogers holding the Mjolnir.
Yeah.
It's like, well, so it must be heavy for some people, but, you know, we all have our burdens. And it's just like...
Feels like at the end of this movie, he should have walked across the water like Peter Sellers and being there, you know?
No, because that is the worst part of that movie, and I love
what?
That movie.
No, yeah, no, no.
If that ended that movie that. With... Yeah, without that, it would have been great.
I love that ending.
I showed the movie...
That's the ultimate funny joke of that movie.
I showed that movie to my ex-boyfriend, and he... We turned it off before. I said, we need to turn this off before we get to this scene. He's like, why? I want to see it. And like, no, I do not want you to watch this scene. I want you to leave this movie just this way, just him walking into the woods, and that's it.
Respectfully, I disagree. But that being said, we all largely agree about this movie, which is just charming and wonderful and heartfelt, even though it felt kind of like a personal attack to me. Because there were points even that Tom Hanks was supposed to be looking at the character, and then they subtly moved the camera, so it's like he's looking at the screen at you. And I was like, I know, I'm a dick, okay? I get it. I'm pissed off.
One particularly long take where he turns and looks at the screen, and I'm starting. Like,
you start squirming a little. You're like,
does
what?
He know? No, does he know?
He knows. If he doesn't, Tom Hanks definitely does.
It's the guy next to me.
No, I mean, obviously, I'm kidding. Well, not completely. I did. There were points in this film that you're going to go and start. I got to pay attention to the movie again because you're going to start thinking about your own life and about things that you could do differently about the things he's saying. Like, I can't imagine not feeling at least temporarily changed by this, having watched this movie, because it is to some degree about like taking into account your own life and what you do and how you feel about things and the way you treat people.
I was thinking of conversations to have at Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Right? And that's fantastic.
Not being angry with yourself as well.
Yeah, not being angry with yourself, finding a way to process your anger with other people, and also accepting that there's nothing wrong with feeling that. You just got to learn how to process it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fantastic. That, I mean, when was the last time you can think of a movie that that was its purpose to make you feel that way? I mean, God knows almost every movie made under the auspices of a Christian movie wants nothing but for you to be afraid of burning in hell. You know, either that or they're just so badly written that you're just like, oh my God. I mean, I'd be fine if they actually made a really great auspices of Christianity movie. I'd be like, go, guys.
I
good
feel
for
like
you.
There was one, but I can't
I feel
remember
a challenge.
What
it, yeah. Was.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Sure, like, I mean, there are plenty of movies that have been like Christian, but under like, this is made by a Christian organization of which there's like always like five or six every year. Yeah, come on. Can you think? Is there, it's not like left not, behind.
There's one that's like Christian-esque, not made by an organization, but it's with Luke Perry. No, not Luke Perry. Luke Wilson.
Okay.
Sorry.
But the point is...
Henry Poole is here. It's beautiful. Check it out.
Every church in the country should be making their, telling their parishioners, you need to go see this movie. They won't, but some of them will. Certainly.
The ones that know if it's a religious affiliation probably will.
Well, maybe, but even so, it's like... You know, it's not overtly Christian, this movie, and so you're not going to get that autonomic response from the churches the way that you do with a lot of other stuff.
There are some references to praying for people, but that's it.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
I throw in though, this is not a family movie. A little kid would be bored out of their gourd in
this. Exactly. This is like you said, it's for Mr. Rogers,
it's definitely
for adults.
It's completely Mr. Rogers.
It's family
adults.
In that there's nothing in this movie that you couldn't show your children, they would just be bored.
They wouldn't know who this guy is, so it wouldn't have the impact.
But I love the performances here. I think they're terrific. I think Tom Hanks disappears into the part with what initially feels from that opening scene like you're hyper aware you're watching Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. By 20 minutes into the movie, I had completely forgotten I was watching Tom Hanks. I was watching Mr. Rogers. And I had to keep pulling myself out of the movie on purpose as a critic just to go, I've got to start paying attention to his performance and thinking about what he's doing. And it's hard because the movie has just got so much soul to it. And when it was over, it's an hour and 34 minutes, I believe, which is the shortest movie I've seen in like 3 weeks. I swear to God.
The credits. Stay through the credits. By the way.
Oh, was it? I left before the
credits.
It's a very slight thing, and it's actually Fred Rogers. And
nice.
It's him singing a song. Well, first of all, it's showing all the models of the different cities that they did and the people making them and using them. But then it ends with Mr. Rogers himself singing the end of his song that's all about, you know, I like you for being you kind of thing.
Yeah. All his dead neighbors.
Yeah. The ending is Mr. Rogers talking to you, not Tom Hanks.
It is a really beautiful movie. There's no way this is not going to end up nominated for Best Picture. Like, literally.
Oh, absolutely.
It would be startling if it did not.
And the screenplay. The screenplay will get nominated.
The screenplay will get nominated.
But not pretentious Oscar
bait. Hanks has a shot at being Best Supporting Actor. If he gets one, it's going to be only because there weren't enough really definite shoe-in choices.
Tom Holland.
Quite frankly, like I said, it's not that he's not great. It's just... Like, he's not the focus of the film as an actor. Matthew Reese is. And Matthew Reese may very well get a Best Actor nomination for this. I could see it happening. Yeah. He is really, really good. Cooper could score Best Supporting Actor.
Do you really
for this.
Think so?
It's not outside of the question.
I mean, I thought it was very sort of like just really standard by the numbers, like, father that's very repentant and, you know, for his past.
I thought he managed to pull off some really great moments, especially towards the end of the film.
Towards the end, I would have
But either way, this is definitely a must-see for this year. I mean, even if you're one of those people who's just so cynical you couldn't imagine wanting to go see this film, they kind of made this movie for you. you are the Matthew Reese character in this film, and you should probably
go
see it.
Richard liked this.
Even Richard, who can be... It was funny. So we're all sitting there. Richard Whitaker from The Chronicles, also a podcaster on oneofus.net, and we always make fun of Richard because he's this great writer and he expresses himself really well, but we always disagree with him about movies. And he's always the guy who comes out with the opinion that no one else agrees with in a group of people who all feel a way about a movie, you know? We're like, like, God damn it, Richard. He expresses it well, but we don't agree with him a lot of the time. Yeah. So we're all sitting there, we're all raving about it. His wife is crying and raving about it, and he's just being completely quiet. I'm like, here it comes.
Yeah, I was like,
oh, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting. I'm just waiting for him to say it. And he goes, I really liked it. I was like, thank God. I'm going to give this 9.5 out of 10. Actually kind of creepily worn cat puppets.
No, they were adorable.
I mean, I even when I was a kid watching the show, which was well into the run of Mr. Rogers at that point, I remember thinking, that's a fucked up looking cat puppet.
Well, that's even sadder because that cat represented Mr. Rogers. They say in the movie and in the documentaries, like, that was him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think he was quite as bipolar as the cat puppet.